Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Running It Straight, folks, for your Wednesday, 24th of April, round 7 in the books for the NRL. And we are talking rugby league for the next hour up until 3 o'clock. Myself, Sammy Hewitt, alongside former Warrior Anthony Gelling. And we have a special guest on around about 10 minutes' time today, Tony Edor, who is, I'm told not to say the head of, but sort of like the coach of the coaches, as it were. Jallo, he's the coach of all the development pathways and junior programs at the Warriors. And the message I got from the Warriors media manager is that he's been around longer than pretty much anyone at the club. So that goes back a long time. Tony Edor is joining us in about 10 minutes' time. Lots to talk about with him. The junior teams that are back in full action in 2024. We have the Harold Matthews team in the grand final on Sunday, which is going to be awesome. We'll talk about that. Another thing we've got to talk about as well, which I'll just talk about right off the top of the show, Jallo, is the news coming out of Sydney that Jet Cleary officially, I know there's been rumblings of it for the last couple of weeks, but Jet Cleary officially has been signed by the Warriors to come over and have his development pathways continue at the Warriors, which is a big signing. And there's lots of ramifications that we'll talk to Tony Edor about as well. We'll look at the Anzac game tomorrow against the Titans, go through the team list for that, as well as some of the other news and games going on this weekend. But first and foremost, Jallo, got to rip the Band-Aid off before you get to all the positive stuff, mate. How have you recovered? How have you come through Friday's big loss to the Dragons?
It was painful to watch, Sammy. Painful physically. I was playing poker at the time. I was at my mate's house. I had my back to the TV, so I was this guy with my head turned backwards.
Right, so painful
for 80 minutes. So painful physically and then painful spiritually just to watch that kind of onslaught from the Dragons. Yeah.
Oh man, it's fair to say probably the worst performance under Andrew Webster.
I'm trying to jog my mind back to last year. I don't think there was many.
Most of the losses last year were games where we were really in the hunt and maybe just a couple of lapses of concentration or whatever. Like, I don't think we've been as soundly outplayed under Andrew Webster as that was.
And it's a tricky one too, because what have we been saying all year when we compare teams and stuff like that? We always say the good teams don't get blown out.
Mm, yeah, that's true.
And we also
said that last week.
I said that last week. We also say the good teams don't lose at home. Mm. And they also don't lose, you know, back-to-back.
Right.
Which is on the line this week.
Right. They don't lose to the Gold Coast Titans.
And you don't lose to the Titans, that's for damn sure.
So, Jallo, talk us through, I guess, what you saw. There are Warriors fans out there, and I know a lot of our listeners probably aren't in this camp, but there's a lot of Warriors fans out there who get very, very emotional in a loss like that, and, you know, it's all of a sudden we're not a top eight team and, you know, we're not going to win a grand final and that. But what did you see from the game, the areas where we really struggled and, I guess, reasons why we saw a performance like that?
I think it looked like we went away from, firstly, what works. And for the first seven rounds, we looked like when we get into their 20, we looked very sure of where we're going. You know, we come up against other teams where, you know, they kind of try to make stuff up on tackle four, tackle five, close to the line. That's what we looked like on the weekend. It looked like we're just kind of freestyle, ad lib as we go. And there was a couple things that didn't work, like the little grubber off the back of those shift plays, which didn't work. And then we kind of kept at it, hoping for one to come off. And I think we went away from just playing direct. If you look at that Dragons line, they didn't come up off the line. They got up a couple metres and then they all just kind of slid and hung back, and we just kind of played into that with those. Yeah.
It definitely felt like at times we had stretched them, like we had gone left to right and we had opened them up, but then we just didn't make the final pass, or, you know, we made a mistake or just something didn't quite work. It seemed like we were able to stretch them a little bit, but do you agree with the sentiment that I think is echoed by a lot of people and Andrew Webster himself, that the boys look tired? Like, it's been, you know, six rounds of pretty grueling football, short turnarounds.
Yeah.
And, you know, just the injuries meant that we weren't able to get that right rotation through the middle that we, you know, want to do, given the sort of bodies that we've got running around.
I think the short turnarounds a factor. I also think the travel's a factor. You know, and you ask any of the players, coaches, they never talk about it because they want to eliminate all excuses. You know, they want to take responsibility for that. But watching that game, I think they went down 18. I think the gap was like 18, 16. One of my mates whispers in my ear, "Webster's got to go."
Are you serious? Come on, man.
That is vintage. That is vintage Warriors fans.
Albeit he works for the Blues, but
sure, yeah, competition. What do you make, Jello? I was on a podcast last night with two legends, the Wise Up Boys, who are very, very analytical and sort of the way that they assess the game, I think, is fantastic. And they actually wanted me to ask you, and you know, from a former player's perspective, lot of fans, it seems, get frustrated, particularly under this Andrew Webster system, where we have this game plan, and if it doesn't seem to work, we sort of just try and keep doing the same thing over and over again. You were just talking about those grubber kicks there, and we just sort of try and do the same thing.
Yeah.
From a player's perspective, how does it sit with you, like, sticking to a game plan versus, like, adjusting? How much you're willing to step outside of a game plan if you as a player are seeing that something is at work versus trusting what the coach has told you, even if you're 18 points in a hole. Because we've seen against the other team it worked, right? Yeah. Like Manly, we were 16 points in a hole, 18 points in a hole, and it worked. We came back. Mm. We've seen it against the Sharks when we were down in a hole there. So, yeah, from a player's point of view, how does that dynamic sort of sit, the playing of the game plan versus mixing it up and trying to do something different?
I think you have to have a bit of a balance. And what you don't want, and what happens quite a lot, is teams wait till they're behind, and then it's like, okay, now let's try something different. Now let's mix it up. Depends on your personnel as well. Some players, they love that structure, and that suits them. Me personally, as a player, I hated that. I hated being told, you know, this is where we're going, this is what we're doing, because I want to play what's in front of me.
Mm.
You know, and if the defense is changing what we're doing, or changing what they're doing, like, why should I stick to the same thing? And that, like, when I was playing at Wigan, that was a very structured system, and that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, and I got dropped. I was in and out the team because of that reason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, I think it just depends on you know, I think Warriors, definitely, you look at the way that we're coached and stuff, it's very, like, very structured, heavily structured.
It is.
And I can understand where that frustration comes from. You know, you see some wingers, you know, like, we're very good at, on the last tackle, we protect our winger, let him catch the ball.
Yep.
A lot of teams leave their wingers wide open, but yet we still don't contest or go for that little tap back.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people pulling their hair out and stuff like that, but it's just the game plan.
Yeah.
You know, our system is, we're going to catch, make a tackle straight away, and then get the ball back way.
I asked that question last night. I said, you know, is that one thing that frustrates you guys, you know, that we're not contesting some of these kicks, at least one or two of them? But to your point, you know, it is that sort of stick to the game plan type thing. The left side is getting a bit of criticism, you know, not being, I guess, creative enough, using Roger in the right way. You mentioned putting him on the wing, and it was funny, Jello, I put that out. I think I tweeted it out, and, you know, lots of people sort of came back at me, but it's funny, after the weekend, people now starting to buy into your theory of maybe shifting Roger to the wing. What do you see happening on the left? Obviously, that's where Tomaiti is generally ball playing. What are you seeing there that's just not quite working, not quite coming off for them?
I think what's not quite coming off is you don't have Luke Metcalf there. You know, that's, I think people are starting to notice his absence a lot more now. Me personally, like, you look at other teams that have lost their number six or lost a half, what they tend to do, and what I think is, the Roosters the only ones that have done it. They put Connor Watson there. You know, he's usually a loose forward. Put him there and just defensively make that the priority. Just defensively lock it down and let our points come from other areas of the field. I think that would be the way to go. Like, for me personally, I like how Chanel defends. He can whack people. He's really strong. I'd put him at six. I know he's injured at the moment. Is he back?
He's injured. He's still injured, yeah.
He's still injured, yeah. So ideally, I'd put him at six and just hammer the right side. You know, that right side can score points and stuff like that. We can rip him through the middle.
It sort of seemed like the one time we did, well, you know, finally when we did get that left to right going, then Dallin goes and scores in the corner, and you're sort of wondering where was that the whole time. But I think you also mentioned, maybe it was last week or a couple of weeks ago, about how teams, we can't just always go down the right like we did last year, now that teams will know that, right? And they've learned from us. We had the surprise factor last year. And so getting that left side a little bit more potent is probably quite important in that regard. But yeah, just seeing Roger getting the ball in better positions, it seems like he gets the ball and he's got nowhere to go. And
nowhere
it's
to go,
like,
yeah,
they're expecting Roger to do Roger things. You know?
Well, Webby spoke about it a few weeks ago, and he said, you know, we have variations. I think it was before the Souths game. Mm. He said, we have variations and we'll use them when we need to use them. I feel like those variations, you see them in the first 10 minutes, and then it's like, And they always score first, you know. Warriors are always good for first try and second try. Might jump to a 6-0, 12-0 lead. And then after that, we're...
Well, that's what we were all talking about, right? That ruthlessness and their middle period where we just seem to, like, button off. And it's why I think having Dylan Walker actually back this week is massive, because it gives that energy lift, you know, through that middle period, which we didn't have against the Dragons.
Yeah, and I think he adds depth to those variations as well, makes, you know, more options available.
He'd be that guy that, like you were just talking about before, maybe could sort of be in that six role just to, you know, be a stable person on defence and maybe just be a ball player on the left. The Sean Johnson Achilles injury, does that worry you at all?
A little bit. It is quite early in the season to be carrying those kind of niggles, you know, especially if you're not training during the week.
Did he pick that up, like, during a game, or is that just, like, it's just happened because of...
I think it's just wear and tear, mate. You're getting on a bit, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a bit of an old man injury.
Get Toru Harris's strapping expert in there and get him.
Well, I don't know if it's the same, because it was near the back end of the year where he was really struggling with the calf, wasn't it?
That's right,
So I'm not sure if it's the same side.
Yeah, interesting.
But, yeah, you get to that age, you know, well, post-30s, it is calves and things like that.
And Andrew Webster said earlier this week that they will rest him if they have to, right? Mm. Like, they're not going to be too proud not to rest Sean Johnson. And he said, I don't want this to be recorded for the team that we do it against to think that they're an inferior team because we're resting Sean Johnson. But, that, you know, we've got to think that that's going to factor in at some point, that Sean Johnson's going to need rest. You know, Toru Harris might need rest at some point.
Do you think he said that because it's coming this week?
No, I don't think so.
Really?
But it might be coming in the next few weeks.
Or it could be last-minute changes, man. I wouldn't.
You think so? Well, who goes seven if that's the change?
Yeah, you'd need Chanel back, wouldn't you?
You would. You need someone. Yeah. You need one of them back for sure. Lastly, I guess I mentioned it, the player fatigue. And we've actually just mentioned it there with Sean and Tohu. In the bench rotation, are some of our boys sort of seeing too much game time? I guess with all these injuries, is that just as part and parcel of it because we've just got guys out? Or I guess the big criticism from Sunday was not playing Zion, was having him in the extended reserves and not pulling him on, because he would have been someone you could put through the middle to give the Tohus or the Addins or the whatever's a break. I mean, do we miss a trick there potentially on Sunday?
I think so, and I think they've made the adjustments there, so Zion will play this weekend, which I'm so excited for, man.
Mm. Oh, I think we all are. I wanted to see him on Sunday. And
I wanted to see him last year because he was close to coming last year. He was kind of in and out, and then he picked up that suspension in the trial game with the high shot.
That's right.
So we haven't seen him yet.
But people said to me on Sunday when I sort of brought the point up, they said, on Friday, I keep saying Sunday, I mean Friday, that he, you know, is he first grade ready? Like, that's why we didn't see him. Maybe Webby knows that he's not quite ready for first grade. But then he's gone and put him in the starting side this week. So for me, it's like, He clearly was ready, so why didn't we use him on Friday? But they're all ifs, buts, and maybes, Jello, and at the end of the day, it's just one game. And for the people that are getting very – and I was just doing it with Staffy on his show. You know, there was Dragons fans telling me they're going to make the top eight. They're going to make the top eight. And I'm like, look, it's one game on both sides here.
Yeah.
So let's just pump the brakes and bear in mind that the Warriors have a lot of people coming back. And Dylan Walker this week will be a massive inclusion, but we've got a lot of people coming back over the next few weeks, and it might be tough. The next few weeks might be quite tough, given that we it's only Dylan coming back. I think Bunty's not back for another 4 or 5 weeks. Marata's the same. Jazz is a while off too, and then obviously Luke's basically the season. So still a long way to go, but I think there are positives that, you know, we can take and a big game tomorrow at home, Anzac Day clash, which we will get into a little bit later on in the show as well. Very, very shortly, we're going to be joined by, in fact, he's on the line now, Tony Edel out of the Warriors, who is the, basically what I've been told is Jello is like the coach of the coach, basically. Looks after the pathways and the development, coaches and managers, oversees that program. He's been with the Warriors for a very long time, and a lot of people are still fond of him from his playing days. I know Staffy was raving about it from 12 to 2, but he joins us on the line now to talk about all the pathways and development programs going on at the Warriors at the moment. It's Tony Edo. Welcome in, Tony.
Thanks, man. Afternoon. How are you?
Very, very well. Now, first, right off the bat, positive news, the Harold Matthews team into the grand final on Sunday, mate. It's just an awesome thing. And to have those teams back in their respective competitions is fantastic. To have one of them going through to a grand final on Sunday is even better, mate. You must be absolutely stoked.
Yeah, really happy for the team, the players, their families. It's actually, you know, we've never had our Harold Matthews team in the competition, so to make the grand final and our inaugural year is great. But, you know, to be fair, to have, you know, a, decent pathway now of 17s, 19s, 21s, reserve grade, right up to NRL. Certainly gives our players something to aspire to, and you know, having this experience of playing finals footy, I'm sure is going to benefit these players in the long term.
Mm. We heard a lot over the last couple of years since COVID, Cam George talking a lot about bringing these the junior programs back in, the development pathways, etc. And we know how well they work at more successful clubs like Penrith, etc. How big of a task was it? Give us a sense of, because it wouldn't have just come out of nothing, how big it was to actually get these programs going again, finding the players, finding the talent, putting them together, getting the coaches, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big job, and I think, you know, we didn't know that we were going to be in these competitions probably till about May or June of last year, to have it sort of definite news anyway. So we'd always had a group of players contracted and some staff around those players, and there was a hope that, you know, we'd get the tick to get going. But once we did, we know we've got the talent in the country. We went around the country and found plenty of players that we thought could play at the level and could progress on to hopefully higher honours at the club. And they've done really well. So, you know, for example, you know, last week's team that we named in the in our preliminary final of the 18 boys, 11 were from outside Auckland, which says a lot about first of all, the talent around the country, but also our ability to pull players from not just Auckland, but from around New Zealand.
Hey, Sponge Jello here, mate. When you say, you know, going around the country looking for players, what is it that you're looking for? And what kind of age are you looking at?
Well, you know, like there's a lot of NRL clubs who are very proactive around the country. You know, some clubs, the Bulldogs, for example, have got they've got an association with Canterbury Rugby League. Manly are heavily involved in and around Auckland. The Roosters are obviously around plenty of the tournaments and run camps here. So what we've tried to do was set up some academies around the country ourselves. So currently we have an association with one in Waikato, Wellington, Christchurch, and last week we established one in Dunedin. And what we're looking for basically a good footy players, good kids, and just the chance to give them an opportunity so that they don't have to leave New Zealand, leave their local schools, leave their families. We can give them, you know, the opportunity to play elite junior football without them having to move, you know, lock, stock and barrel to the east coast of Australia. So, you know, we're looking for athletes, basically, good footy players. You know, I think kids that just want to work hard because, you know, the NRL is a hard place. It's a tough place. And if we can get these kids into our system from an early age, then we're a better chance of progressing them. So currently in the NRL, we can contract boys the age, the year that they're turning 15. Which is what we do because, as I said, it's a competitive market out there and we want to be a part of that market.
So what does it look like from the club's perspective? Because I know a lot of people look at the Warriors system and stuff like that and you always see, you know, a young Kiwi kid will debut for an NRL club overseas and, you know, people always say, the Warriors had him, he was in the Warriors system and, you know, he's the one that got away or something like that. What does it look like from the club's perspective when you've got so much talent and you're trying to keep hold of everybody? What does it look like when you leave, when one of these young players, you know, how old are they when they're looking at leaving? Like, what's it look like from the club's view?
Oh, like I said, to be fair, we're just an opportunity for kids to stay in New Zealand if they want to stay in New Zealand. We want them to stay at their own school. So, like, currently now we fly kids up from Christchurch to play every weekend in the Harold Matthews just so that, you know, during the week they can go to their schools in Christchurch and be with their families. We're prepared to do that with any kid that's playing for us across the country. Are we going to miss kids? Oh, definitely. We're not. It's an open marketplace. We're not going to be able to grab every single kid that we want. And to be fair, some kids want to get to Australia and some families want to move there. But ultimately, we just want to be able to fill our NRL side with homegrown talent. The last time the boys made a grand final in 2011, over 70% of our boys were homegrown. That's when we had the under-20s as our development sort of side. Now that we've got three teams, I'd like to think in, you know, 5 to 7 years, we'll be producing the same sort of numbers.
It feels like, Tony, to your point there, we maybe, since 2011, have been missing out on this in some respect. And like I mentioned at the top, you know, Penrith, everyone looks at them now and what they were able to sort of build over a five-year period. And now you look at their junior teams all winning their respective comps and, you know, the homegrown talent that they've got. What are, I guess, the Warriors doing differently this time? What is it about these programs that you've now put in place to make sure that, you know, it's not going to be, I guess, what Warriors fans have seen for the last 27 or so years, that it's really going to be a system that has longevity, that players are going to stick with it, and that we're going to see in 5 to 10 years' time a Warriors team full of local-grown talent?
Yeah, well, I think in previous years, even when we had the under-20s, that was our first time that we could play. We could put players in a Warriors jumper. To have the ability to put kids in that jumper from, you know, the age of 15 and 16 means we'd like to think that we can get some genuine loyalty and some belief in the jersey, to be fair, and certainly making a grand final in our first year helps. So, you know, previously, you know, since we lost the under-20s in 2018, I think it was, all these kids, you know, if you can sign for an NRL club when you're 14, turning 15, and they can offer you, you know, high-quality rugby league, you know, went either in Queensland through the Cyril Connell, Mal Meninga Cup, or in Sydney with the Harold Matthews and the SG Ball, couple that with a really strong school rugby league system, it was a big pull for kids and their families to chase that dream, especially if you are a rugby league tragic like myself. Now that we've got these pathway teams, there is the ability for the kids to stay here, and we think we can provide just as a competitive program than anyone else. Back to Jello's point, we're not going to get everyone. But we want to get the ones or be able to have the fair crack at the ones we do want. And I think we're doing that at the moment.
In terms of the, I guess, development of a player or of a team of young players, and I'm sure this is where you're heavily involved in this, Tony, but how much of it is starting at the top with what, you know, Andrew Webster and Andrew McFadden and the people at the top want Warriors players to be in 5 to 10 years' time versus actually just letting these kids sort of play and develop naturally on their own? Like, is there some sort of Warriors system that goes from top to bottom, you know, whilst these players are developing?
Oh, there definitely is. And in terms of the standards, the values that the NRL players and the squad stand by, we have exactly the same. And as you mentioned, Webby and the boys, the NRL team, have done a great job in bringing the club to the forefront of all rugby league people in New Zealand and, to be fair, across Australia. I think, you know, when you're trying to get kids to come to the club, they've got to have a belief that something really special is happening, and I believe there is. I think, you know, there's real potential for some long-term success for the club, and ultimately players and parents want to be part of a winning footy team. And I think what they're seeing, you know, in terms of what the NRL boys are doing, where the club is going, and the profile of it is certainly helping us in terms of recruiting the kids that we want to stay.
If you look at some of these new kids that are coming through, so Dimitrik, Jacob Laban, Ali Leotawa, is this the new kind of like the new wave of the new system? Like if we were to use Zion as an example, right? Zion's making his debut this week, very exciting. What has been Zion's like journey to get here?
Mm. Yeah, well, those boys, all those boys were part of our development squad. When COVID hit, the club sent probably eight of our best junior players who had been contracted at the club and sent them over to play in the Queensland League at Redcliffe, where the NRL team were based for a year and a bit during that COVID period. And I think you saw the benefits of them being around the NRL side. They were actually part of the last SG Ball squad, whose competition was sort of disbanded in, I think it was 2019, when the COVID wave came along. And so they were probably good evidence and proof of the system. Their journey was obviously a little bit different to what we're planning for our current crop of kids, but in terms of like putting them in Warriors jersey, getting them around the Warriors NRL team and the club, they're probably living proof that we can develop as many first graders as anyone else. In fact, I do believe someone might be able to correct me if I'm wrong, but when we had the under 20 system, we produced more first graders than any club, even the Broncos. I think they were one behind us. So we know the talent here. We just a bit of time and the right systems, and I'm pretty sure we can get back to where we were in terms of producing local talent.
Just one more question about the talent scouting. So when you go out and you're looking at players, are you looking purely at what they do athletically, or is there kind of a little bit more to it? You know, you talk about standards and values. Do you dive a little bit deeper into that with the kids, or do you kind of just pick the best athletes and hope that they're good people as well?
Oh, I think, you know, we never sign a kid after one game and go, right, he's coming here. Mm. I think, you know, the best thing is to get him and the parents in. They come and train at the club for, you know, a month or so.
Did you say?
Know about them.
That'd be a good Almost. One.
I mean, Jello thought he'd finished his athletic career.
The parents do a, you know, they're generally really committed to their kids. They sit out in the car park for hours, you know, on training nights. But to be fair, you know, we're not going to sign a kid and without him knowing what we're about, and also what we have a bit more knowledge about what he's about. So I think the game's not for everyone. The club isn't for everyone. So we have to make sure that we're a good fit. And, you know, sometimes, as I said, young kids and their families are keen to move to Australia. But like I said, we just want to be able to give them an opportunity that if they feel like New Zealand's home and they want to stay at school with their friends, they want to stay with their families, then we're a genuine option to progress them into higher honours.
Mm. Couple of quick ones for me to finish, Tony. Just firstly, do you feel like there's been a bigger shift or more importance put on like development and pathways across the NRL? I'm not saying that clubs haven't always done this, but it just seems like in recent times, you know, the Bulldogs are sort of following suit now, the Warriors are following suit off the back of Penrith. It seems to be that there is now a more genuine focus that you build a club from the ground up. Is that how it feels from your perspective?
Well, all I know is that at every tournament we have around the country, nearly every NRL club is there looking for boys. So, and we understand the market. As I said, we've got one advantage in that we're able to keep the kids at home and at their schools. But we also understand that it's very competitive. I think clubs, you're right. I think clubs are now getting an understanding of, although that's a heavy investment. In the long term, it's probably the best thing in terms of for the club and how to generate their next crop of talent. I know the Bulldogs are always known as you know, the family club. They used to develop kids from around the area, but even them now, they're sitting in an area which is surrounded by Parramatta, the Tigers, Penrith, Parramatta. So they, you know, it's a really condensed area of NRL clubs who are chasing all the same kids. So I can sort of understand why they're trying to come here and grab a couple as well.
Yeah, and I guess that's the advantage for us, isn't it, that we've got that sort of, not a monopoly, but obviously we don't have anyone particularly close trying to compete, although like you mentioned, we've got them all over here watching the tournament. Just to finish, Tony, if you could, I guess, zoom out and crystal ball 10 years into the future, what's your ultimate goal of where you want the sort of pathways and the development to lead? If you could say 10 years in the future, this is where the Warriors sit, where would it be for you?
Oh, I think, you know, we've obviously got to refine the way we're working for the first year. You know, the young fellas have done a good job in terms of making the grand final in the 17s. Certainly, you know, in 10 years' time, I'd like to think that our NRL side is basically almost full of homegrown talent, whether that's from Auckland, Wellington, Waikato, Christchurch. I don't really care as long as they're Kiwis. The club will always invest in players where, you know, from overseas, if we feel we need some positions to cover. But my ultimate goal is that, you know, we're successful across the five teams, that we're generating talent, and that we're putting pressure on the NRL coaches to play our young kids. That's my goal in 10 years.
I got one more question, and this is a bit of an age-old one. It goes back and forth. If we were to have a second NRL team in New Zealand, do you think it would just dilute the product that we have with the Warriors, or do you think it would strengthen the game overall?
Good question. I think initially, you know, you'd probably see a little bit of dilution. But, yeah, it's a really tough one, Jello. I can understand, you know, there's a couple of consortiums in the country that feel New Zealand need another side. I'd like to think that, you know, that might be a few years away yet. But certainly, you know, going through the country and seeing the talent and the actual upsurge in interest in rugby league, in which what were usually rugby union dominated areas, has been really refreshing. I think if the NRL boys can hold that profile and that success over the next few years, then I'm certainly, you know, there'll be room for another side. But yeah, I'll worry about our boys in blue at the moment.
Awesome. Hey, Tony, really appreciate you jumping on. We've taken up plenty of your time, mate. It's been awesome to just hear and get your insight into that development and pathways program, which I know so many Warriors fans are very keen on hearing about now that we've got these teams playing again and in grand finals too, which is awesome. So enjoy Sunday. Well, enjoy tomorrow and enjoy Sunday as well, because that's going to be an awesome occasion too. Thanks heaps for jumping on.
Appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
There you go, Tony Edor there, who leads the Pathways and Development Program at the Warriors. Some really awesome insights there, Jelly. We've got to take a break because we're running out of time. I might dig in with that with you after the break. A couple of texts that have come in here as well. Stay with us here on Running It Straight. Welcome back into Running It Straight. We are about 20 minutes away from 3. Good long chat with Tony Edor there. And if you didn't catch it, go and find it on our podcast channels. We spent so much time with him, we're not going to have a whole bunch of time to preview round 8. So what we're going to do is we'll get stuck into the Warriors-Titans game tomorrow. And then myself and Jello will go, once the show ends at 3, we'll go into the studio and record our preview for round 8. So if you want to listen to that, go find it on the podcast channels following the show. But let's chat about Warriors-Titans tomorrow at 4 p.m. It's the opening game of round 8, and of course it is Anzac Day and Anzac Round. And I actually can't remember the last time the Warriors opened an NRL round, Jello, like the first game of the round. So because did they usually do that with the Thursday game with Melbourne? Was it always
Because Anzac Day falls on any old day. Usually it's kind of floats around the weekend. Yeah. I think there might have been a couple of times where they play Melbourne on the opening.
Okay, so I just couldn't remember the last time we did it. But anyway, they are doing it tomorrow at Go Media Stadium, Mount Smart. First time we get an Anzac game in how long? And unfortunately, the stat says we are 0-9 over the last 9 Anzac games. They've all been against Melbourne Storm. I would have actually liked Jello to play Melbourne, you know, at home with this current team, you know, knowing that we can sort of beat them. It would have been a great hoodoo to get over. Yeah. And it's the Titans, which in a way is going to be good for the ego if we can put a performance in, but it just doesn't quite feel the same. But tomorrow night at 4 p.m, Warriors v Titans. I'll just run through the team lists and then we'll analyse those first. So Nicol Clockstar starting fullback, Watene Zelezniak and Marcelo on the two wings, then Rocco Berry, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck the centres, Tamati Martin, Sean Johnson the halves, Adam Fennell Blake, Mitch Barnett the starting props, Wade Egan the number 9, then Jackson Ford, Jacob Laban gets his starting debut in the 12, Juzy Tuu Harris the 13, then you've got Dylan Walker, Tom Ale, Zion Mai'u'u and Paulie Roach on the interchange. What do you make of the 17? Jello, Dylan Walker back in, which is good news. No Kirk Capewell though, and Zion Mai'u'u getting that debut too.
No major surprises there, just the Capewell one. I think he was a late exclusion, but it's an exciting team, man. Jacob Laban, we've seen a little bit of him so far. It's going to be good to see some more of him. Zion as well. I can't wait for him to get on, man.
Yeah.
Okay, we've signed Fisher Harris for next year. You got Zion, Dimitrik, Jacob Laban. What these guys are going to look like in 3 years, 4 years.
Yep.
That's going to be a pack of doom. That's Bash Brothers. They're building the Bash Brothers.
I was saying last night on that podcast that, you know, that these are the ones you should be excited about. Like, I'm excited about James Fisher-Harris, but these are the ones you should be excited about because in 4 to 5 years' time, to your point, they're going to be the ones that are your starting pack and they're going to be guns. Mm. So
these guys are young. They're like 19.
Yeah.
So these guys have gone from SG Ball straight to training with first grade, playing New South Wales Cup. You know, they've gone, jumped straight over Jersey flag and all that stuff.
There's there's a text that's coming here as well that's agreeing with a comment that was made. Also, from Sean says, I can see Sean being a late scratching tomorrow. Do we think Tane Tuopiki can cover the halves? I think we need to leave Walker playing the middle ball role. They've missed so much this year. But, yeah, suggestions that maybe this week could be the week that they rest. Jello, do you know something we don't know?
Oh, if he's not training. If he hasn't trained for 2 weeks in a row.
That's true, actually. Yeah, he hasn't been training with the team. So maybe okay, we'll keep our eyes.
The only thing that made me question it was a comment of, you know, if we were to pull him out, it's not that we're saying we think less of any other team.
Yeah, true.
But if you were to pull him out, it would be against that time. Maybe, I don't know.
Your words not Webster's.
Hey, every game's a hard game.
Yeah, no, I do agree. Can't and that's probably what he's trying to say. Let's have a look at the Titans team. AJ Brimson, the number one. Jaden Campbell still out with that knee injury. Alofiana Kamparera and Jojo Fifita, the two wings. Brian Kelly, Harley Smith-Shields in the centres. Tana Boyd back in the six with Kieran Foran in the seven. Moika Fotueka and Jermaine Jolliffe, the two props. Chris Randall, the number nine. David Fifita, Bo Furmore, the two back rows. And Cleese Haas, the lock. Sam Verrills, Aaron Clark, Isaac Liu and Josiah Pahulu on the interchange. What do you make of the Titans 17? The big story for them, obviously, in 2024 is no win so far. No Tino Fasomalawi, no Jaden Campbell at the back. But what do you make of that 17 from Dez?
AJ Brimson at fullback.
Mm-hmm. I think that's dangerous.
Yeah, I think a lot of people wanted him to be the fullback. They've been trialling him at centre and stuff like that. That'll be interesting to see. Tanner Boyd, he was dropped 2 weeks ago, and they've actually been playing quite good without him. So
yeah, but he did play well last week against Manly, Tanner Boyd.
Yeah. True. So I think he's kind of like a Jackson Hastings with Newcastle. You know, they sent him back to Cup to because it wasn't working. Give him a bit of a boot up the backside, and now he's back, and you know seems to be playing all right. So, you know, it's a dangerous team, man. You look at that back five. You know, Pereira, Kelly. They score from anywhere.
I think the back lines are actually quite similar, more similar than people think. Like AJ Brimson is a similar player to Chance, but is probably a little bit more. He's a bit faster, so he's a little bit more explosive speed. You know, the wingers in terms of Cam Pereira, like he can create tries. You know, he can create points off those opportunities. Jojo Fifita is pretty exciting. Brian Kelly, like underrated defensively as well. I think he's a real strong defensive centre. So. Whereabouts from what you've seen from the Titans over the last couple of weeks, and they've gotten close to those to that first win. What about them scares you? Like, we're on the park. Do you think they're going to try and take the Warriors on? We might be a little bit fragile.
Well, I think each week they've been getting better and better and better. And it reminds me of the Bulldogs. So the Bulldogs, they started terribly, and then they've kind of just stuck to their guns in some respects and just played tough and rolled up the sleeves. And you know, look at someone like Cleese Haas, at 13. He's getting big minutes and he's just more experience. And every week he looks better and better and better. Mm. You know, Jolliffe as well, he's playing big minutes too. And they, you know, David Fifita, he was starting on the bench for most games. Now he's back in the starting team. So, you know, even he's starting to get a bit of wind in his sails now. I just think, you know, like the Bulldogs have just kind of stuck tough and not changed too much. They're starting to get results.
Yeah,
you hope that this isn't the week that they kind of make it click.
We'll just save it for one more week.
Yeah.
I feel like Jello, the Titans play their best football with that broken play type stuff, and particularly with AJ Brimson. Like he breaks a game open when like the fences are lapping or there's a ball to ground or, you know, a dodgy kick or whatever. Sort of like Tyrell Sloan was for the Dragons, you know, and Zach Lomax. So I think the Warriors, you know, it's going to be about grinding the Titans down. Like it's completion rate, it's meter eating, and it's getting to an area of the park where we can put pressure on them. Defensively, you know, they're one of the worst teams in the comp. I think they're 32 points a game average over the first seven rounds. So the points are there to be scored.
Yeah, well, I think every game they've lost, they've conceded 30 points or more.
There you go. So it'll be a matter
of... And they've lost every game.
So. Yeah, so there you go. So it's a matter of obviously putting those points on the board for the Warriors and making sure that they don't give the Titans a sniff, because I think, you know, a lot of emotion tomorrow, Jello, with it being Anzac Day back home in New Zealand, a special day for everyone here, but also for the Warriors, given they always have that Anzac Day commemoration. So just got to be careful that, you know, the Titans don't take advantage of that and come out flying and all of a sudden, you know.
And that's something that didn't happen last week. So the Dragons, you know, they did play a loose game, a lot of ball on the ground, a lot of broken play. I think if the Warriors want to stop that and really control things, you got to stay up. You got to be prepared for those offloads, which means, you know, not retreating early.
Mm.
Third man, you got to be, you know, second man, you got to be wrapped up on that ball.
Yeah.
Just all the little things that they have been doing well most weeks, but, you know, really let slip last week. So maybe that's been a focus of the week for training and stuff like that.
What's your prediction, Jello?
I'm thinking Warriors 1-12.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think the Titans will roll over. And the last 2 weeks, we've seen that they can defend their line.
There's been
patches where they just hang real tough, like in that Raiders game.
I think it was 7 sets against Raiders. I think it was.
Yeah. It would have been the week before the Eagles game, yeah.
Yeah.
Where they just, they were happy just to kick it dead if they needed to, and then just you know, drop the ball out and just keep D'ing up.
Mm.
And I think they built a lot of confidence from that, and you could see it in that Seagulls game.
All right, we've got to take a break. When we come back, we have a quick chat about Jet Cleary, and we'll preview the rest of the round post-show as well. Stick with us here on Running It Straight. Running It Straight, and I've got to give you my Titans-Warriors prediction before we go into round 8, Jello. So it's a little story for you, the way I see it playing out. I think a lot of emotion, Anzac Day, big build-up. I think the Warriors come out, Dallin, a try in the first 5 to 10 minutes, early doors, crowds up on their feet, getting excited, getting loud, but then the Titans bounce back, 2 quick tries, maybe before the 15-minute mark, 10, 12, 6, they're leading. We're starting to get a bit nervous. But then second half, we come out, bench big impact.
This needs some background music. Put the gladiator music playing,
or Saving Private Ryan or
yes.
So. And I'm thinking end score 34 points to 10. That's my Warriors prediction. I think a big win.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'd subscribe to that magazine.
Steven Spielberg, get in touch if you like. SNZ, it's Kiwi for Sport. Right, what are the other games going on across round 8, the Anzac round? Well, the traditional Dragons-Roosters game, which has always been a cracker no matter how the two sides are tracking. The Dragons are surprising people somewhat, Jello, sitting in ninth position at the moment on the ladder. Big win against the Warriors. They've beaten the Seagulls as well. They've had some heavy losses in there as well. I'm still juries out on the Dragons right now and the Roosters. But to be fair, they couldn't get a better opposition than the Roosters, because the Roosters still trying to work out who they are in 2024. Yep, I had them as minor premiers once again. I'm just never going to do that again. I've done it for like the last 3 years. I'm never going to say the Roosters are going to be minor premiers again. They welcome back Sam Walker, so they got their 7 back, which means Connor Watson jumps back to the interchange. The Dragons are basically unchanged, although I see Jack Bird is on the extended reserve, so he might come in if he passes fitness test, and that would mean Lomax goes back to the wing, where he's been shining. So it is at Allianz. Big game for them. There once again will be a lot of emotion involved. What do you reckon, Dragons Roosters?
Well, what's your thoughts on this? Because I know you're not convinced by the Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about them that you just think that?
Well, it's the inconsistency, right? So they lose to the Knights. I mean, that game was a water bath. They lost 38-0 to the Dolphins, and someone was saying to me that, oh, you know, it's because they had a gastro flu or something. But it's more...
I never heard that one. Was that
that's from Ken. I mean, he'll come up with any excuse.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to look at these sorts of teams. The Titans, they beat the Titans. They lost to the Knights, beat the Tigers. The two wins that is quote-unquote convincing anyone is Manly and the Warriors. In the Manly game, there were 30 errors in the game. Like, both teams were trying to lose that game. It was arguably the worst game Tom Trbojevic has ever played. I think he made 5 or 6 errors on his own.
Yeah.
And they barely won it. The game against us was really the big one. And don't get me wrong, that's fantastic and that's amazing. You bottle that up for sure. But I just don't think – this is the problem that fans have. And I was talking about it with someone yesterday. They brought up a great stat around where the Warriors – I think we were 5-5 through the first 10 rounds last year, the Warriors, sitting 5-5 before we went on our little run. The point was teams that make big changes, so teams that get rid of coaches or wholesale players coming in and out, or, you know, they finished poorly last year, can often come out really strong because they've got new thinking, new mindset. They come out of preseason, they want to implement the plans, they want to implement the new structure, and they can quite often sort of shock teams in the first maybe like 5 to 10 rounds. But then what this person was saying was, as you see the better teams, more experienced teams, start to work them out and start to find out how the structures, the systems work, then the cream starts rising to the top. So for teams like the Dragons, there are teams that will surprise you. And I think probably for me this year, negatively it's the Rabbitohs. I didn't see them sliding that much. But for me, sitting inside the top 8 at the moment this year, for me is probably the the Dolphins. In terms of a team that actually is really playing well and looks like they should maybe be in the top eight.
Yeah.
But the teams to me that are a little bit pretending are the Raiders, the Dragons, and the Cowboys are sitting in eighth, and I don't think they're going to be the way that they're playing, they're going to be a top eight side.
Yeah.
My point in all of that is the Raiders, the Dragons, like, great start to the season. They've got to do it for another 20 weeks. Right, with really quality teams. Like, the Warriors are outside of the top eight, and I think they're a top eight team. So they find their way in there, which means someone has to fall out.
Mm.
I really think the Bulldogs are starting to build nicely, so they could push in. And then, you know, you take your pick of sort of the Roosters, the Cowboys, and some of those teams that might find their way in. So, you know, that's my thinking around the Dragons, Jello.
Yeah, I know what you mean about that whole, like, when you have that little restart or that little refresh, it brings that new energy.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it firsthand 2010. So I spent my under-20s days with the Roosters. So 2009, Cellar Dwellers, I think they picked up the wooden spoon, mm-hmm. or second to last or something. The next year, same thing, they bring in Todd Carney. He has a Dally M year. They had Brian Smith, new coaches, when Fittler got chucked out. So they went from wooden spoon in 2009 to 2010 grand finalist. And a lot of people were kind of asking the same questions, like, no, you know, it's mainly the same roster, you know, they're going to burn out. But, you know, they ended up going all the way all the way to the final, I think.
But that's just, you're just completely contradicting my point. You're saying the Dragons are going to go to the grand final.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying I have seen that that restart and that refresh last longer than a few rounds.
I get you.
But when you look at, this is one thing people don't realise, is so many injuries across the comp, like, you know, teams 5, 6, 7
yep.
players out.
Yep.
The Dragons have nobody out. Like, yeah, they have got the least injured team.
Spot on. So
Jack Bird, he's got a head knock. He might be back for round eight. Luciano Leilua, calf, and Corey Allen with his knee. That's it. That's all their injuries.
Yep.
So they're playing with the full strength squad. I think if you look at the Warriors, you know, they missed guys like Morata.
They're one of the most decimated, yeah.
Yeah.
Dolphins as well.
Yeah, it's a big factor. And when teams do get their players back, you know, I think that's winners. When you do see teams like the Dragons and other teams, or the Pretenders, as we might call them, kind of drop off.
So do you, like, this is a big game sort of for both teams tomorrow night. And I legitimately could see the Dragons beating the Roosters. I'm not saying that I don't think they can do that. They've got the Sharks the next week, which I think will be probably their real test. But, yeah, the Roosters, who are just woeful at the moment.
Well, they're just as inconsistent.
Correct.
So I compared them last week. I said, you know, Warriors were playing Dragons. Everyone had Warriors heavy favourites. I said, well, the Dragons are 3-3. So are the Roosters. The Roosters are 3-3, yet Roosters are up on this pedestal.
Yep.
And I think you always do kind of hold them in a high regard because they've got such a superstar lineup. But in my honest opinion, I think Roosters will get this one.
Mm-hmm.
I think Anzac Day, it is a big occasion. I've been there for those games. I think Roosters get this one. I think it's a bit of a flogging 13+, just because the
Me
Dragons
too.
Are hot and cold, hot
yeah,
and cold.
I think
you know, Sam Walker's back, Dom Young is back. I think the Roosters, honestly though, I think they're a better team when they just have either Carey or Walker. And I've heard this before being said, that they are almost the same player.
They are very similar.
And when they're both there,
they're
both small, and they play side to side. You know, it's like they link up and just go side to side. The Roosters with Connor Watson at the six, like I said, you know, earlier, having that defensive six there, plus the forward pack that they have, that's a dangerous team.
Yeah, I just love Trent Robinson to give Terrell May some more minutes on my fantasy team. But I agree with you, Jello. I think it could be a bit of a bloodbath in Sydney. So I'm picking the Roosters by a big amount.
Yeah,
Thursday night game. Fantastic. We get three games on Anzac Day. 9:50 kickoff. It is the Storm up against the Rabbitohs. Poor Bunnies coming off a bye and a terrible start to 2024 have to come up against the Melbourne Storm, who sit in second position. The Rabbitohs bringing back Damien Cook after not playing him in that game just before the bye. They've got a couple others in there. Like, I know Jai Arrow's been named. I'm not sure is he in the starting team? Oh, he's on the interchange, so he's in the 17. So it's good to have Jai Arrow back for them. And then outside of that, pretty much unchanged. I mean, Jai Gray still in that number one jersey with no Latrell Mitchell. I don't know how long Jason Demetrio has, and I know we'll talk about coaches at the end of all this, but I don't know how long he really has. But it's like every game for the Rabbitohs at the moment is an important game. But I just don't think I can see them winning it. It's in Melbourne. It's an Anzac Day. This could be the Warriors. This could be a 70-point drubbing.
Yeah, the Melbourne show up. Mm-hmm. They show up for that Anzac game.
Yeah.
Was it 0-9 for the Warriors on those Anzac tears?
Yep.
I played in one of them. It was an absolute massacre. I've got the Storm 13+. Interesting stat though, the 2014 Bunnies that mm-hmm. went all the way
mm-hmm.
started the season 3 losses, 1 win. And you look at this South's team and you think, well, they've started the same. Could it be a similar story?
No.
But you compare the lineups and you forget how good that 2014 South's team was.
Yeah, correct.
They were big. They had size all over the park. Even their six, John Sutton, he was like a giant himself.
Yeah.
And you look at what size the Bunnies have. You got Totola, he's injured. Jai Arrow is back.
They had Adam Reynolds back then too.
They had who?
Adam Reynolds.
Yeah.
Which I think is a game changer. What do you reckon when Latrell comes back? There's a lot of chat around keeping Jai Gray at fullback and putting Latrell into centres. Like, that's going to be a big, I guess, ego check for Latrell. But do you reckon he and Jason Demetrio, that's the kind of move they'd be willing to make if it's not working?
I think it's needed. Like, I'll compare it to the 2014 Souths team again. Greg Inglis played fullback that year.
Mm-hmm.
The game has changed since then. Like, the rules have changed. You look at all the good fullbacks that are doing it, and they all run big meters. Chance does big meters. Dylan Edwards, big meters. Clint Gutherson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys aren't big bodies. You know, they're built like they could run a marathon or something like that. Latrell's not that guy. He's not going to push up on every play. He's not going to play both sides of the field. He's not going to do a lot of things that I think need to be done in that fullback position. I think he's a lot better out on the edge. I think if you were to partner him up, put Jack White in at 6, Latrell at centre, and then a winger outside that's danger.
That does sound dangerous to me. But I do think, tomorrow night's going to be tough for them. I'm going 13+. I borderline, that's the sort of game I might put a little same game multi on and go like Storm by 30. Mm. You know, I just think they could get really ugly. Looking across the first couple of games, it should theoretically be quite an easy round to tip. Seagulls, Eels. That's the Friday night game at 10 p.m. Seagulls, you know, just sort of keep doing what they do. I've said it all along, you know, a fully fit Seagulls team will be a top four team. You know, Luke Brooks, Terry Evans, Tom Trbojevic, keep them all healthy, and they'll be in the running. I mean, Ola Kawatu is just a beast at the moment in that second row. The Eels are a little bit desperate, and like I said, we'll talk about coaches. I think Brad Arthur's under a lot of pressure. The team, you know, you saw the comments of Dylan Brown after the loss to the Dolphins saying it was embarrassment, it was an attitude thing, that's why they didn't show up in the second half, guys not working, not wanting it enough, etc. They've got some big defensive issues, big defensive issues, particularly on their edges. So look, Seagulls, Eels, it's in at Four Pines in Sydney. Do you see the Eels, you know, getting up for this one on a Friday night, or
Seagulls? I think they do. I think Seagulls pump them though, 13+. Mm. I've got another big score.
I think it could be like that this weekend. Yeah,
yeah, and it's funny because you might compare it to when these two teams met just a few rounds ago, you know, not that long ago, and Eels beat them, and Seagulls were going good. Everyone tipped the Seagulls to win that day. If you remember how that game went, I think they jumped out to a 14-0 start after as many minutes, the Seagulls. Then Mitch Moses went on a bloody rampage and he put, you know, 2 tries, scored a try himself, and then it's 16-14.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they were able to, it was a real back and forth game, really scrappy. Eels end up winning that one. There's no Mitch Moses. You know, they've kind of changed things up again. So that Dejan Azzi, who had, you know, one good game, had a bad week last week, he's gone again.
Yeah.
So who was the... They've got
another debutant because they kept Blaise, and I don't understand this, like Blaise Talangi, who had that game in the centres, and I think he needs to be in there over Morgan Harper, because I thought defensively he's been just shocking the last 2 weeks, but they've decided to keep Blaise out of it. So instead they've got Ethan Sanders playing in the number 6 jersey, who I don't think has played an NRL game. I think it's going to be a debut. Mm. So, I mean, they've just cycling through halfbacks. And, you know, the thing, I take your point around Mitch Moses. I probably have undervalued, because I think Mitch Moses is a quality player, but undervalued how much of a difference he makes to the Eels, almost to the point of a Ponga Knight situation. Like, an Eels team without Mitchell Moses, you can almost put a line through them.
Yeah.
It's that big a deal.
I'll put one more. Fogarty Raiders. I think he will missed. I think he'll be missed more than Ponga will be missed by the Knights. Well, I think he'll be missed more.
So?
As an for one injured player, he'll be missed by.
Oh, that's
his
probably
team
fair.
More.
That's probably fair. Although I'm putting a big a big line through the Knights as well, and I even think the Knights could slide potentially to 17th.
Ooh.
With no Ponga, but well, they'll be challenging the Titans. So you're going 13 plus for Seagulls.
Yeah.
Saturday 7:30 game, Tigers Broncos Campbelltown. And the Broncos know Ezra Mann, but they do welcome back Adam Reynolds. That's a massive plus for them. And outside of that, you know, all the usual cast with Walsh and Staggs and Arthurs and all them in the back line. And Payne Haas coming back as well. Billy Walters, Brennan Piacura back as well. So, I mean, cheap as that forward pack and the bench. Like the bench for the Broncos, Willison, Hetherington, Fletcher Baker, that's imposing. So I like the Tigers. I didn't like the game on the weekend that they lost, but I've been liking against the Panthers, but I've been liking how they've been building almost like the Bulldogs. I think they're starting to just get things a little bit right, better than they were last year. But I think Jello, I don't know, I just feel like it's another 13 plus on, you know, on Saturday night at 7:30.
Yeah,
well, I just don't see the Broncos losing their game.
I think, yeah, I think Tigers are building nicely. And you look at it like, yes, they got some young players that have stepped up, like Lockie Galvin and players like that. But you also look at how much experience they actually have. Like how many guys have been to a grand final. You know, Ollum grand final, Brent Naden grand final. Is that his first game for the Tigers?
Brent Naden?
Yeah.
No, he played on the weekend.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's played already. John Bateman, Coruscant. There's heaps of them that have been there and done it, you know, more than I'd say half the team. They are building nicely, and you watch them last week against Penrith. They went okay. They weren't.
I actually thought they played okay. Like yeah, Penrith just bad. Penrith, but
yeah, Penrith was Penrith.
And there was that moment as well, which could have turned the momentum of the game with Ollum getting ankle tapped.
Yeah, well, you look at the stats. I think they led the possession stats, so they were 53%. I think they completed over the 70s, but the balls that they did drop were all kind of the last pass or, you know, while they're on the attack, it was all made down the right part of the field.
Mm. And the Penrith Panthers completed it like 90%, so that doesn't help.
Yeah, just Penrith being Penrith, man.
Yeah.
If I was to pick one upset of the round, I would say this is...
Really? Tigers Broncos?
Well, a lot of them, you look at a lot of them, they look like one-way traffic a lot of these games are going to be. This possibly could be the upset of the
round. I sort of can feel you there a little bit, although, like I said before, I can't see anything more than a Broncos one, but I sort of can.
Broncos don't play good away. Not this year. They haven't won an away game this year. Three away games have lost them all.
That's fair. I just think with Adam Reynolds, I think if they didn't have Reynolds, if they lost both Ezra Mann and Reynolds 100%, even just with Ezra, I think maybe they'd be able to, the Tigers be able to get up. But I just think with Reynolds, like, he'll just control that kicking game. He'll just control everything. And then their forward, and the forward pack puts them in a good position. That's the key.
Yeah.
Payne Haas and Patrick Carrigan and Ben and Piacura and Jordan Rickey, they just put them in a good position.
Well, that's an interesting point you're raising. So you're saying even without Reynolds, there's still a chance of winning, playing a game. You look at all these other teams. So you look at the teams that are struggling. You look at the Eels. You look at the Raiders. You look at the Knights. One player goes missing, it's, oh, well, we tried. Like how many teams are actually relying
there's only two teams to me that can do that, and that's Brisbane and Penrith.
Or they've showed that with no
Correct.
Cleary.
That's what I mean. They're only teams that have showed that they can do it without a star player.
So are you saying if SJ goes from the Warriors, no chance?
I wouldn't say no. If he got a season-ending injury, there's a part of me that wouldn't say like no chance.
Yeah.
I don't think they'd win it. I don't think they could win a comp without Sean.
Mm.
But I seriously think we would suffer big time with, like, borderline, would be on the verge of not making the top 8 without Sean.
Yeah.
Like he's that big of a piece.
Mm,
I think most teams really are in that position with a 7 Jello. Like, no clubs can really afford to have a backup 7 that's, you know, that of that class. And I actually think, here's the ironic thing, I think the Eels are one of few teams, if I look at teams across the board, I think the Eels are one of few teams where Dylan Brown and Mitchell Moses – And actually probably the Storm as well.
Mm.
Losing one, the other one on paper should be able to step up into that one's place, and then you can bring in a young guy underneath.
Yeah.
I just don't think Dylan Brown's sort of done that. But the Storm are the same, right, with Cam Munster and Jerome Hughes. If one of them was to go down, like let's say Cam Munster, Jerome Hughes takes on more responsibility. They put a young guy in the 6, and I think that still works.
Mm.
Vice versa.
Well, you've seen Jerome Wishart. Wishart
Correct.
Steps up when
so,
one of
so, so, you know, but not many clubs have that ability, and especially with the Warriors without Luke Metcalf now. You'd be looking at what Tamaiti and geez, they probably have to put Dills there, right? Or Dills in the 6 and Tamaiti in the 7.
Yeah, well, I think that's what happened with the semi-final against Penrith last year.
Right. So, and there's just no kicking game there. Anyway, so you can see an upset, but what does your head say?
Tigers 1-12.
Okay, I like it. Cowboys Panthers 9:35 on Saturday. It's in Townsville. The Panthers big in obviously getting Nathan Cleary back into the side. He hasn't played in four rounds. And the Cowboys are sort of sliding, and I want to talk about Todd Payton later on, Jello. They're sliding big time. They give up points like it's going out of fashion, and they come up against the best team in the competition. So Townsville Saturday night, is it? Lucky break for the Cowboys or no dice?
Nah, they got to fix things defensively. I think if it was any other team than Penrith, they might have a chance. They're quite similar to Brisbane, where they are just all out attack. Like if you look at the Broncos play statistically,
100%.
They'll lose so many departments, but then just score from anywhere on the field at any time.
Yep.
Like if you watch them against the who did the Broncos have last week? Sorry,
they had the Raiders on the weekend.
They had the Raiders. So you look at that Raiders game. Raiders are winning every stat. Mm-hmm. They've won possession, territory, and the other team's 20, doing everything right. But then, you know, Reece Walsh gets half a gap and see you later. There's
those three bombs on Chevy Stewart. Ruin.
I'm gonna get to those. I'm gonna get to those. But this one, I think Penrith too good. Cowboys, they got too much to fix defensively, and that's not something you can fix in 1 week. I don't think.
It's been a real interesting slide from Coach of the Year 2 years ago, Todd Payton, top four side, to last year, and then where they are sitting now. And I'm not saying it's over for the Cowboys because I still think they can get on the verge of making the top eight, but right now they're not looking like a top four side at all, and they've got a lot of work to do, like you said. So we'll take Penrith in that one. On the Sunday, two games, 4 o'clock Dolphins Knights. I honestly just think it's as simple as this, Jello. Without Caelan Pong, you just draw a line through the Knights. I just think it's that simple. And the Dolphins, I mean, it was a remarkable turnaround for them. They've got so many players out. I'd say them, alongside the Warriors, are one of the most affected clubs in terms of injuries and the names that are injured. They got Trey Fuller to play at fullback, who wasn't even in their top 30 contracted players, had to get an exemption from the NRL. But they go and put 40 points on the Eels. So I just think it's, Caelan Pong is out. See you later. I think the Dolphins win that one.
I'm just looking at the team here. So they got the Knights have David Armstrong playing fullback. Do you know much about him?
No, I think it was between him and young Will Price. David Armstrong, I think this is an NRL debut.
Well, just looking at the team list, they got the photos. He looks like Caelan Ponga. Maybe that's the tactic.
That's true. Put a bit of headgear on him. That's not bad.
Dolphins surprised me last week. I thought they were really going to struggle. So that that Trey Fuller, the guy that played fullback, he made his debut last year against the Tigers, and I think that might have been the only game he's played up until that game last week. But man, he just stepped up to the occasion, and he's he's one of those guys you don't know if he's going to do it again because you haven't seen enough of him.
Yeah.
But I'm going to take the Dolphins in this one.
Close though. I don't know. I feel like it's a fait accompli that the Dolphins will win. I don't know if it'll actually be a comprehensive one. I could see a 24-12 or 24-16, a little bit close, but not. But a pretty decent showing from the Dolphins. But I mean, the Knights side is still good on paper. It's just what they've shown without Caelan Ponga in the past is that they can't win without him.
Yeah, and the Dolphins they got a really strong defensive team, and I think. That's what they base their team on, right? They're going to pick their team like typical Wayne Bennett team. We're going to pick the best defensive team and go from there.
Right, Sunday, final game, 6:05, Raiders-Sharks, Upper GIO Stadium in Canberra. If you didn't think that the Storm game was going to be an absolute riot, it could be Sharks-Raiders. And my thinking here, Jello, is, and poor Chevy Stewart, who's also in my fantasy team, who got peppered by bombs from Jock Madden, is going to be peppered from bombs by Nico Hines. No Braden Trindle. No Braden Trindle for the Sharks. So Daniel Atkinson coming. But to your point, what Jamal Fogarty does, and I think the Raiders are one of the better teams in the comp for meters, for run meters, so they get into good position anyway. But what Fogarty does, and it's similar to Sean, is the kicking game gets them out of trouble when they need to, and it also forces the opposition to start very deep in their own end or under these high bombs. Without that, and how the Sharks have been playing recently, I would be scared if I was a Raiders fan with what's going to come on Sunday.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, that kicking game, what it adds. So even if the Raiders have a average set and finish on halfway, he can drop that kick right on the head, and now he's got the other team in their 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the Raiders are great defensively. I don't think they complement the kick as well as they could. If SJ was to not re-sign next year, I reckon Jamal Fogarty would fit perfectly into how the Warriors play now. Interesting.
I was going to ask you about that, actually, towards the end. I'll circle back to that. But in terms of this?
You got to take the Sharks in, plus. Like, it is a high school team. You take Fogarty out. Oh, I think, like, Fogarty, if you take him out, the average age of the team drops to, like, 20.
Well, look, Kyle Weeks, Ethan Strange, and Chevy Stewart are all debutants to the NRL this year. Oh, Ethan Strange, I think, played a game last year.
Oh, he's a veteran then. But Ethan Strange? Team, he's a veteran.
Ethan Strange. Well, I'm just saying, like, it's just such a young...
Yeah.
It's just such a young back line.
And you got to... This disappointed me last week. So it's raining, pouring down. They keep putting those bombs up on Chevy Stewart. Yep. Each time the bomb went up, like, they were big kicks. They weren't little end over end. They were big kicks.
Mm-hmm.
Every single time, you look at both wingers for Canberra, they just stand there and watch. Like, no support.
Yeah.
Like, even the guy that they're not going to kick down the short side. Yeah. You've got time to get back and help.
Yeah.
Nothing. And even when he might drop the ball, it rolls backwards. They're still nowhere to be found. They're not behind him, waiting for the crumbs. They're not in front of him to protect them. Nothing.
Yeah.
And you watch it when they do the replays and they show the wide-angle lens and they kick it and the wingers literally just, oh, good luck, man.
Yeah.
If that happened once, I'd be strike. Not if I was Chevy Stewart, but if I was one of the other players, a centre back, where I'd be into that winger, like, what are you doing?
Yeah, 100%.
Like, help him.
Yeah, and that's where you need that experience. And
it was like 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, but credit to him, like, came out in the second half. I think the story was that Ricky Stewart basically said at halftime, I want to, this second half, I want to find out if you're a first grader.
wingers, don't help him. I want to see what he's made of. And no one help him.
To his credit, he came out. I mean, he ran directly at Hetherington, I think it was, and got absolutely turned over. But credit to the guy for the kahunas that he has. So, all right, so we're taking Sharks in a big one.
Yeah.
I think Sharks could, once again, be a bit of a bloodbath, a bit of a cricket score.
Well, there's going to be a lot of points scored this weekend.
I think so. I think it's one of the easiest rounds to tip. Whether or not we get that 100% right, it's going to be very interesting. And you circled that Tigers-Broncos one as maybe the upset. I think maybe the Dolphins-Knights, even though I've gone really hard on the Knights not winning without Kalyn Ponga, something there. It's the NRL. Honestly, Jello, sometimes I just bet with my heart because, I just have absolutely no idea.
Well, every week, even if I look back at last week, it's like, man, the first, no one predicted the Dolphins doing that scoreline, on the Eels. Same with the Warriors game.
There's lots of good same-game multis to put together, I reckon, with try scorers and all sorts. Because I think there will be points. That's probably the big thing, right? There's going to be points. Before we talk about coaches and coaching pressure, just quickly, the news from the Warriors, the official news that Jack Cleary is going to sign the young junior over in Penrith. He's 17 years of age. He's signing a 3-year deal to come over to the club. And it's funny because you normally wouldn't really do a press release for like a junior player, but because it's the last name Cleary, here we are talking about it, Jello. Couple of reservations from me, and then I want to get your thoughts. 3-year deal. He's going to be 20, obviously, when he at the end of that contract, which is right on the cusp of sort of NRL debut level. Like, maybe if he's an absolute gun, you debut him at 18 or 19, but generally you're probably looking around that sort of 20 mark. So there's a part of me that's sceptical that he's going to come over, develop in their junior system, and then just head back to Penrith or head back somewhere else when he's 20 and first grade ready. There is also another part of me that wonders how much of, because obviously it's the last name, and how much of Nathan's development came because of Ivan and the Penrith system. Is Jet going to be the same in a completely different system, and is Jet just going to be the same period? I mean, obviously it's going to be very hard to match his brother, but that's, I guess, a couple of questions that I've got.
I think it's a bit of a gamble because this guy hasn't played against men before. He's played what, under-19s?
Under-17s.
Under-17s?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
He has played a little bit SG Ball, sorry.
So SG Ball's 19s now. You haven't seen how he goes against men. It's like buying a lotto ticket or a raffle ticket, Better odds than a lotto ticket, but you buy a raffle ticket and just think, who knows? Maybe this guy could be good. If Sean's got 1 year, 2 years left, maybe he slides in that 3-year time frame.
Mm-hmm.
I know you mentioned before your little theory about it being part of the Fisher Harris deal.
Yeah, I did wonder about that. If Ivan just said, hey, if you're going to take James, can you take my son, just develop him for a little bit, and then we'll take him back when he's ready?
Mm. Possibly.
Just saying.
Well, I didn't even know he existed until Monday. And I was like, oh, Nathan Cleary has a brother.
Really?
Oh, that's cool.
He's got a sister too, maybe NRLW in the future. Oh, I don't know.
Might be part of the same deal.
Yeah.
No, it's exciting. I guess we'll
see. It is exciting. At the very
He's
least,
got like a movie star name, eh? Jet Cleary.
Jet Cleary. 17 years old. 3 years to prove himself.
It looks like Keanu Reeves too.
He does actually. He does, yeah. He's got it's a bit of a cross like mullet type Patrick Swayze.
John Wick thing going on.
John Wick, yeah. It's interesting. Right, that segues us into halfbacks and Sean Johnson, who debate around this week whether he's going to re-sign for next year. He said that he's talking to the club, they're working through it. I think he'll sign for one more year. Whether or not he lasts that long is another question. Jello, but if you're looking at even next year and the years beyond, you're going to need someone to replace Sean Johnson, and it's not going to be a Jet Cleary or someone in the June system. You're going to have to get someone in until those players are first grade ready, almost like a James Maloney at Penrith those early days. Who's on your radar? You mentioned Fogarty. Is there anyone else that might be on your radar that you think would fit the system, that would come away from whatever they're currently in and would work really well?
It's hard to get, like you said, it's not going to be a young guy, young up-and-comer. It's got to be...
Well, they want experience.
It's got to be an established halfback. Those established halfbacks are so hard to get off contract.
Yeah.
And you look at how many there are... Like, who is there, really? Like, would you go Chad Townsend? Would you put him in that category?
Play the numbers game. There's 17 teams, and you're one of them, so there's 16 sevens. And of those 16, probably let's write off maybe four or five of them as not really fitting your target bill. So then there's 12 of them. And then, of the 12, you got to work out how many are on contract, off contract, or would be willing to move, and it's a small number. So...
I
think they throw the kitchen sink at Jerome Hughes, and I actually said this before the news came out that he was thinking about going back to Queensland or going back to the Titans or whoever. He's off contract, I think, with the Storm at the end of 26.
Okay.
So you'd be able to negotiate him at the end of next year, which means you might have to play 26 without him or with somebody else or whatever. But then from 26 you'd have him, which would be awesome. At that point he'd be a lot older, two, 3 years older, but I just think he'd be the perfect fit. Kiwi, leader, good kicker, controls the game, good alongside a ball runner like Munster, Metcalf, whoever that is. And so I think he'd be a great one.
I think that's the best shout. And that's, like you say, 26, but, look at every other player that comes
correct,
over
compassionate
early.
Consideration.
Yeah.
But I know his family's in Queensland, so that might not be a possibility. Jamal Fogarty, Chad Townsend, bringing him back. I think he's past it even in that regard as like an older statesman.
I think it'll be hard to get Fogarty. I know Raiders, especially Ricky.
He's got a club option as well, so club can decide if they want to sign him or have him for another year.
Well, Ricky Stewart, he's all about loyalty, eh? So I remember when George Williams was at Canberra, when he even mentioned looking elsewhere, they were like, sweet, you're dropped. And
yeah,
don't
true.
Play again, see you later.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't think they really don't muck around at Canberra. It's like you're in or you're out.
I'm just looking at...
You're not sitting on the fence or negotiating with other teams.
Yeah, Jamal Fogarty has a club option in 2026, so they could say, no, we want you to stay another year in 2026. So, it'll be interesting. I'll have to go through a big list and find out the sevens that are off contract. Right, just to finish, I want to talk about coaching pressure, Jello, because I feel like there's a couple that are under the real microscope, and we're still sort of, I guess, waiting in the shadows to see which coach is going to get the boot first.
Well, you thought someone would be gone by now.
Did I?
Yeah.
Did I say round seven?
I think so. I think you said...
I thought I said round 10.
No, you said South's coach will be gone.
Demetrio. Oh, that's right. I thought he'd be gone on Monday after he lost that game. I don't know. He'll be gone. I guarantee you Demetrio's gone this season, Jello. Yeah. I'm probably more certain about that than anything. But let me throw a couple of names at you. What I want you to do is give me a scale of 1 to 10, how safe you think their job is currently, right? Between 1 and 10.
Okay.
Let's start from the bottom. Let's start with the Titans, Des Hasler. Des Hasler.
I think he's six. I think he's safe.
You think he's relatively safe? First season?
Oh, you mean safe for this year?
Yeah, for this year.
Yeah, he's six.
Just because it's his first year?
Yeah.
Even if they're winless through, say, 10 games?
Yeah, because I think he'll just blame the roster and be like, I've got to have time to implement my thing. So maybe even a seven. I'll bump him up to a seven.
Give him an extra point. Yeah. Right, Rabbitohs are next in line. Jason Demetrio.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's gone, Skis. I think they've already got a coach lined up.
Yep.
I think Mal Meninga will take over, but I think it's a matter of when.
How quickly does it happen, do you reckon?
I don't think it'll happen this year.
Mm.
Yeah.
So you reckon he'll last the season?
I think he'll last the season. I don't think Mel wants to walk in halfway through. I think he'll need the time to prepare and do it properly. He'll do it on his terms, you know.
Okay, I want to throw this one out at you. Adam O'Brien at the Knights, and I know he signed a contract extension after last year, and he, Des might blame sort of roster Kalen Ponga being injured, but they're currently in 15th. I can see them sliding down a couple more places. I think they might even battle that 17th position. Is Adam O'Brien under any sort of pressure?
Not if he just signed the extension. I think if he was going to go, he'll be gone. The reason that they kept him on was because they can see something, or they respect that he's got a bigger plan than, you know, what's happening this year.
Mm-hmm.
I'd put him at a five.
This is a big one. Brad Arthur at the Eels.
Oh, I think he's coming to the end of his tether. I think they said he's the longest serving coach at a club at the moment. So I think it's been...
Current, yeah.
So I think it's been 10 years at the Eels. Is that right?
I think so. It sounds right, yeah.
The grand final 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's his peak with the Eels, and I think they're starting to see that now. If anything, since that grand final, they've gone backwards, not forwards.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
So how long do you give him?
I'd say that 10 years, I think they might let him see the season out.
Trent Robinson and the Roosters.
I think he's safe, man.
You think so?
Yeah.
Just because of loyalty and Frank Panisi?
Yeah, I think
so. Is it Panisi? No, who's the...
Nick...
Politis. Sorry, yeah. Panisi's the Storm guy. Nick Politis.
Yeah, Nick Politis. I think what Robbo's done for the club, where they're at, because they're not in too bad a spot. I know they're not top of the table, but they're not in too bad a spot. I think he's a eight, I think.
Right, two more to finish. Weird one for, I think, people that are fans of this man, given what he did at the Warriors and the Coach of the Year 2 years ago, but Todd Payton.
Yeah, I don't know. What's your thoughts?
I feel like it's heavily reliant on the Cowboys' finish this year. So I don't think he'll go this year. Mm. But I think if the club looks at a team that, say, finishes in like 11th or 12th, if they're just on the verge of the eight and he can convince them that, hey, over the next couple of years we've got the plan in place to bring guys through or whatever. But if he finishes 11th or 12th now, he's gone from making the top four to them two seasons outside of the top eight. And I would just be and how they're losing as well, Jello, is the big thing, right? They're losing big time. Some of these games, they're just leaking points left and right. I just think there'll be questions asked. So I'd probably still give him like a six. I'll give him over the 50%. But I think the question will be asked if they keep losing.
Yeah, I think you'd say that because they have such a strong roster. Like, you look at their team, they're good, man. Like, they're spending big money on that team.
Yep.
So you want to see results. I'm not too sure who he's got around. I know Justin Morgan went there from the Warriors last year, so he's over there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too sure what some of these coaches are like, because I know sometimes it's like, okay, I'm the head coach, I'll look after attack. I'm the captain now. It could be a setup where, if he's got a defensive coach, attacking, they're awesome. Defensively, they're terrible.
Yeah.
So you might see a defensive coach get scapegoated and be like, well, you know.
Well, look, Justin Morgan got a lot of flack defensively when he was here as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Cowboys fans are turning on him. The last one I want to throw at you is Ricky Stewart at the Raiders, because I think now without Jamal Fogarty, and look, whether he uses that excuse or not, but I think they slide. And it's just, you know, Ricky Stewart's been such a lifelong coach of that side, and they made a grand final a couple of years ago. But I just think at some point, if you're Canberra, if you're part of that management, you do just have to wonder if a fresh voice is going to turn that club around. Like, how happy are you with just making a grand final every 10 years versus being a consistent challenger?
I think the biggest issue for them is roster. They won't look at the coach as being the issue. If they had a better team on paper, I think Ricky Stewart would do a lot more. I think at the moment he's getting the best out of a struggling roster.
Mm.
And I think if you were to bring in another coach, I don't think they would do as good a job as Ricky Stewart.
Mm, no, that's fair. All right, Jello. Well, I've kept you far too long. It's been awesome to go through all the round eight games and some of the other big issues around the NRL. Always so much to talk about, which is what makes the sport and the league so fantastic. We will do it all again next Wednesday. This is a little extended edition for you if you're listening on the podcast channels. We'll do it all again next Wednesday, 2 o'clock, here on SENZ. Running It Straight. We'll catch you then.